The show is live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. And we're actually connecting with a couple of different performances by one man who is going to be live in our studio today. His name is Bucky Halker. He's a folk singer and a scholar of many types of folk songs, but focusing a lot lately on the folk songs of Illinois. And in fact, that will be the focus of his program tonight in Sullivan, sponsored by the Moultrie County Historical and Genealogical Society at their annual meeting. It's going to be at the First United Methodist Church on Jefferson Street in Sullivan. Dinner starts at 6, and the program itself starts at around 7:30, they say, in the church. And so that's going to focus on the folk songs of Illinois. And then looking ahead to December the 5th, Buddy Halker will be giving his program called Americana Rhythms, Songs of Woody Guthrie. And that's at 2 o'clock on the 5th of December. So we're looking at both of those performances. He's live in our studio, and I'm looking forward to it. It's live and local. Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball is the name of the tune. Woodrow Buddy Wilson, the name of the composer of that tune, comes off of a disc called Baseball's Greatest Hits, Volume 1. And that's a leftover from the interview we had the other day about the Baseball Music Project on Live and Local, which was at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And kind of by way of introduction to our guest today, that's certainly one kind of Americana. And coming up in a couple of weeks, Bucky Halker will be at the Champaign Public Library giving a program on the songs of Woody Guthrie. Tonight he's going to be in Sullivan for the Moultrie County Historical and Genealogical Society giving a program of folk songs of Illinois. In his bio, Bucky Halker calls himself folk singer, writer, rocker, scholar, labor songster, and alt-country twanger. I really like that last little that little phrase. Somebody else has called him the living heir of Woody Guthrie, saying that Halker reaches into his strings and conjures up the passionate fire of John Steinbeck.
Kind of interesting, eh? Yeah, it's...
I didn't catch that juxtaposition there, but, you know, there you go. Well, that's Bucky Halker. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Kevin.
I've been looking forward to the opportunity to have you live because when we talked before, it was just on the telephone, and you had shared some really wonderful recordings. And I enjoyed that conversation so much. As soon as I saw that you were going to be around, I said, hey, let's see if we can work this out. And here you are.
Well, it's good to be here, and I appreciate that you followed up and asked me to come down. I guess the timing was appropriate this time, so it's great to be here.
Well, and we can catch two shows in our listening area, which is great, too. Give us a little background on all of those lines there, folk singer, writer, rocker, all these other things. Where did you start? What was the original?
Probably the rock and roll. That would have been the first thing. You know, when I was a teenager, I quit my piano lessons when I got an electric guitar, like many kids in my area who either had to play the piano or the accordion, I grew up in northern Wisconsin, and there was a lot of pressure to play accordion back in the 50s and early 60s. But then once the Beatles broke, everybody played rock and roll. So that's kind of where I started, was with that. And then, you know, I got interested in blues and folk music just because I liked a lot of different kinds of music and started playing more acoustic guitar. And, you know, that brought in the folk song thing, and then very quickly got interested in Woody Guthrie, you know, got serious about that later on. And then, you know, quite a bit later, I ended up with a PhD in history and have since written quite a bit on labor music, working class protests, working class culture, but also, you know, just generally about American folk music history. I've done a lot of different stuff with that and lectured quite a bit around the country and Europe on that subject as well over the years. So...
Well, you sort of said you ended up with a PhD in musicology, but you don't just end up with one of those things. You got to put some work into it. What did you do in college? I mean, what was your focus at that point?
Well, my undergraduate degree was in history, and then I went to a small college in Idaho, the College of Idaho, and then came back to the Midwest, went to the University of Minnesota to get a degree in U.S. history. And that's what my PhD is in. My specialty was really American labor history, economic history, you know, working class culture, those kind of general areas. But I did a lot of work on music in those days, and my dissertation and first book were on on working class protest music and poetry. So that's kind of where the academic thing came from. It's 20-some years ago that I got a PhD. It seems kind of distant now, so I didn't mean to sound offhanded, but it kind of it feels that way. It's so long ago now. I can't believe I put myself through that regimen and torture, you know.
Every time I think about maybe getting a doctorate, I just think of what sounds to me like regimen and torture. That, you know, I've got two bachelors and two masters, and they don't add up to a doctorate, and I sure wish they did.
Yes.
But what attracted you to the whole idea of the labor movement? Was there something in your own background that gravitated you in that direction?
Well, there's definitely some of that. You know, both my parents come from working class backgrounds, although my dad was part of that upward socially mobile group after World War II, who benefited from the GI Bill and became a businessman at some point. But my grandparents were, you know, they were very kind of New Deal Democrats, and that had a big influence on me. And my grandfather worked in the stockyards in Chicago. And talked a lot about that. And I had an aunt who's a teacher in the university system and was a real union activist going back to the late 30s. So there's some of that in the background, but it was also just from my vantage, if you still want to figure out what makes America tick and most of the Western world and the world in general, you have to at some point learn about economics and about issues related to class, whether you don't have to be a Marxist to do that, but I think it helps understand the role that the dynamics of class and the economy in general play in kind of making the world tick the way it ticks. So that's what really motivated me on a personal level to do that. And then just some politics, because, you know, my politics are pretty liberal, and I was, at some point more supportive of organized labor, and so pursuing a labor history degree just seemed like the right thing to do for me.
You say you were at some point more supportive of organized labor than you are now?
I grew up in northern Wisconsin, and there is a long history of the labor movement up there, both with Scandinavians and East Europeans working in the iron mines and on the docks connected with the iron ore industry. And the lumber industry has a long history of, labor movement activity. So that had some bearing on me. I had this kind of academic involvement, I guess you could say, that was separate from being directly involved with the labor movement. But certainly while I was in graduate school, I increasingly found myself, and part of it was the music. They would call me. They knew I was working on this labor music stuff. And so they would call me and say, hey, can you come and play a convention or do something like this? And so it was a convergence of kind of my politics and my music, and it's just continued to go down that road since then.
You said you weren't actively involved in the labor movement, but have you ever, quote unquote, labored?
Oh yeah, I mean, I had to all through high school and stuff. I worked in the woods in the summer, peeling pulp, which was tied in with, it was an old hard labor.
Would you say peeling what?
Pulp. It was they would peel the bark off these popple trees in the early summer, and then those, when you strip the bark off, then you would cut it into 96-inch pieces. You'd have a chainsaw guy come along with you, then they load it on a truck and they take it down to Green Bay and Wisconsin Rapids and turn it into napkins and toilet paper. It was the hardest job I've ever had. Along with working on a farm, I spent three or four years in the summers and in the fall sometimes working on a farm doing mostly hay baling, but also different stuff in the field. So I got a lot of experience with that. And all through college, I had blue-collar jobs to make money on the side. So, and even when I've been broke a few times as a musician, I've resorted to temporary labor. So
you've been broke only a few times as a musician? That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think you get used to it after a while. You get used to living on nothing, but sometimes it gets worse than that. So.
Well, there aren't any labor unions to represent folk singers.
No, there aren't. Although I do have to say the American Federation of Musicians, which mostly is not a very good union, is kind of still locked into a 1930s or 40s model of understanding the industry. There is one local out of New York, Local 1000, that is mostly folk singers and rock people, everybody from Arlo Guthrie to Springsteen to, you know, people like me. And they're very active, and they're now the second largest local in the American Federation of Musicians. So I think there's a signal there that things might be changing, and they're forcing some of the folk festivals to negotiate contracts, union contracts and stuff, so musicians can get, you know, some benefits anyway.
Well, we've been talking for about 10 minutes now. Yeah. We should probably let you sing a song.
Okay. You want to hear a Woody Guthrie song? We might, since we've been talking politics.
Well, sure.
Okay, let's do, I was just warming up on this one, so we'll do this one. This is one of Woody's early attempts at kind of political music. Wrote this in the late 1930s when he was still in Los Angeles, but saw a lot of homelessness and took an old Carter Family tune and rewrote it and gave it some different lyrics and called it I Ain't Got No Home. I ain't got no home, I'm just rambling around. Hard-working man, go from town to town. The police make it hard, wherever I may go. I ain't got no home in this world anymore. My brothers and my sisters, they came walking down that road. It's a hot and dusty road that a million feet I've trod, and the rich man took my house and he chased me from my door. I ain't got no home in this world anymore. I ain't got no home, I'm just rambling around. I'm a hard-working man, baby, that I go from town to town. Police make it hard wherever I may go. I ain't got no home in this world. I was farming on the shares, and always I was poor. My crops I would lay at the banker's door. My wife took down and died upon our cabin floor. I ain't got no home in this world anymore. I ain't got no home, I'm just rambling around. I'm a hard-working man, baby, that I go from town to town. The police make it hard where just a rambler, just to see what I can see. It's a wide, wicked world. It's a funny place to be. You know that the gambling man gets rich while the working man stays poor. I ain't got no home in this world anymore. I ain't got no home, I'm just rambling around. I'm a hard-working man, go from town to town. Police make it hard wherever I may. Got no home in this world anymore. I ain't got no home.
Bucky Hawker singing one of Woody Guthrie's songs, I Ain't Got No Home, and he's live in our studio here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, and you can hear him tonight if you're in the Sullivan area or want to drive down there. You know, I don't know, I probably should have asked this, I don't know if for any reason this event is closed. It's officially a meeting of the Moultrie County Historical and Genealogical Society. It's not closed. I did talk to somebody yesterday, and now that I remember about it. Yes, you can sign up for dinner.
Yes, exactly.
And then hear the concert.
Yeah.
So it's at First United Methodist Church at 216 West Jefferson Street across from the fire station in Sullivan. Dinner starts at 6 in the activity building. And then it says your program will take place at about 7:30 in the sanctuary. Are they feeding you?
Yes, they are.
That's okay. Great. So you'll know when it's ready to start.
I will indeed, yes.
You won't just be sitting there waiting for everybody. If you want to make reservations for the dinner, which you do need to do, call 728-4085. That's 728-4085. Or you can do it in person if you're in Sullivan before 4 o'clock today at 117 East Harrison Street. And if you want more information on any of that, feel free to call me at WILL and we'll repeat it. So that's tonight. But then you're also going to be doing a program called the Song. No, that is the Songs of Woody Guthrie.
Yes. Tonight's Folk Songs of
Illinois.
Right,
I'm getting them mixed up.
Yeah, I am too today.
I was going to say, how do you keep track of these things?
Well, there is some overlap occasionally that helps. So.
Well, you've got a few different programs.
Yes, I do.
Those are two. And when you were here last, I'm trying to remember what you were doing last. It was something having to do with the Folk Songs of Illinois. Maybe it was that program.
Yeah, it was the Folk Songs at the library last time. It was Folk Songs of Illinois. I have another one I do on Songs of Death and Dying from Illinois.
Oh, we talked about that.
Yes.
That was a wonderful topic, actually.
Yeah, it's and strangely enough, I have done a few of those programs, and I went in with my trio and recorded a CD's worth of the songs that I had found from Illinois. Mostly, I collected this stuff while working on the Folk Songs of Illinois project, but there were so many songs, and varied songs as well about death and dying and disaster that we decided to record a full CD of that stuff.
There's one song called The Shawneetown Flood,
yes.
I think was one you had
done. Yes, that's about a flood in Shawneetown in 1898 that killed about 100 people. There's another one about a tornado, train wreck song, gangsters, you know, the usual diverse Illinois methods of death and
destruction.
Yes.
Did you have any particular affinity for that sort of thing?
Well, no.
What got you interested in that?
It just struck me, and a friend of mine who's a folklorist first mentioned it, that, gee, there's a lot of songs you've picked up that are about death and dying or disaster songs. And I went, you know, you're really right. And I looked through them and just thought about it for a long time. And, you know, I guess as a historian, I'm trying to come up with an explanation. And my best explanation is that, you know, Illinois is a very large state, but it also is situated in such a way that, you know, it was the rail center, so you have a lot of train wreck songs and poems. You've got rivers, so there's a lot of floods, and there's songs written about those floods on the Ohio, the Mississippi, the Illinois. Tornadoes, because we're in the tornado belt, so there's songs about tornadoes. Lots of gangsters, urban and, you know, rural gangsters during Prohibition, so there's songs about that. Vigilante justice. There's a long history of vigilante activity in Illinois. Some people say it's the center of vigilante kind of activity. I have a friend, John Hollis, who used to teach at Western, that did a book on this. And then there's a lot of gunslingers, because you're right on the cusp of the frontier in the east, so you get, I guess my whole point is that it's a very distinctive kind of state because so many things come together here. So there are very many and diverse ways to die here that you may not have elsewhere. And it really struck me.
Just in case that was a point of tourism for Illinois.
So I guess it's my ironic sense of humor. I just thought, well, yes, we have to do a CD of these songs. So.
And so one can find that. What is it? Is that
it's called? Yeah,
Songs of Death and Dying.
I'm selling it on my website, and you know, I always send people a CD, baby, not for my stuff, but for all kinds of independent music in the United States. But it's called Caskets in the Cornfields.
Oh, yes. That's a great title.
Yeah, I did a little survey of some of my fans to see what they preferred, and that was the one that won out.
Since we're talking about it, you got one of those?
Yeah, I do. I'll play you one of my favorites. This is, it may not be the oldest or most traditional in some ways. It was actually written by Carson Robinson, who was a classically trained musician who wrote a lot of early country songs, like very early when they were still doing Wax Cylinders. And he wrote this song about the gangster Charlie Berger, who died in 1928. What's kind of interesting about this song, you know, traditional ballads often when there's a murder or something, they'll go on for 12 or 14 verses,
yeah.
You know, these English ballads, recounting every gory detail. You can tell in this song that there are recordings available now, and the Wax Cylinder in the 78 only held 2 or 3 minutes, so you had to write a song that finished within that length of time or you'd be up a crick. So this is what he came up with for Charlie Berger. I
I'll tell you of a bandit from a great Midwestern state. Never learned his lessons until it was too late. The man was bold and fearless, the leader of a gang. But his boldness could not save him when the law said you must hang. The bandit's name was Burger, he lived at Shady Rest. People learned to fear him throughout the Midwest. Out in O.S. City, Joe Adams was shot down. And then the cry of justice was the murderer must be found. Dan Thomason was captured, he turned state's evidence. Burger was found guilty, for he had no defense. He asked for a rehearing, but that he was denied. In the county jailhouse to take his life he tried. On the 19th day of April in 1928, way out west in Benton, Charles Burger met his fate. Another life is ended, that's another chapter done. There's another man that gambled on a game that can't be won. Ten Commandments tell us that straight and narrow way. If we do not heed it, sometimes we'll have to pay. We almost face our master, our final trial to stand. Then we learn the meaning of houses built on sand. Then we learn the meaning of houses built on sand. Then we learn the meaning of the houses built on sand.
What was the name of that tune?
The Hanging of Charlie Burger.
The Hanging of Charlie Burger. That wasn't as graphic.
No.
As some of the others.
No, some of those are much more in detail, and you know, the English traditional ballads can be very long that way.
You know, when you said those long ballads, I was thinking of Gordon Lightfoot, the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Does that come under that genre?
Yeah, I think that would fit in that tradition. Yeah. Definitely.
Is that his own song?
Yes, it is.
How many of your own songs do you do? Any?
How many of my own songs do I do?
Do you do your own stuff?
Yeah, I do some of my own stuff. Yeah,
I was just looking here again at your bio from your website, and talks about at least one early recording where you had a lot of acoustic originals, Step and Blue.
Yeah, that was kind of a bluesy and acoustic CD.
Was that solo?
Well, I had a band. Most of my recordings are really kind of studio recordings where I bring the band in that I'm working with at that point on. The last couple original projects, these Wisconsin 213-63 CDs, there's two of those. I had a lot of friends from over the years that I've worked with in Chicago that performed on that, and that was a real studio project. But, yeah, I still write a lot. For some reason, these programs, the folk song ones and the Woody Guthrie ones, are real popular, so I don't do as many like original club dates as I used to do, and there's not any money to be made in clubs anyway anymore. Mm. So really, this has been working on these other projects has been good for me because it's helped me just kind of branch out as a musician.
Do you sneak in your own songs to any of those programs?
Typically I do. Yeah, it really depends. Sometimes people will ask me to do them because they want to hear, well, what is it that you do when you write? Is it like the stuff that you're playing? And truthfully, most of the time, it's not quite like that, to be honest. My stuff is very eclectic. Borrows a lot from blues and jazz and, you know, sort of straight ahead old honky-tonk country, pop rock stuff. And there's definitely the folky element in there, but it's way more diverse than that. You know, we had full horn section on the last CD, lots of keyboards, Hammond B3, you know, the big Steinways. And, yeah, it's a different sort of thing when I do that, you know.
I don't have a horn section to offer you, but yeah. You got one you could share with us?
Yeah, I could do that.
I'd love to hear what you do.
Give this a try. It'll take me a little second here to get this set up. I got to get a harmonica out to do this.
Sure, I'll talk while you do that because okay. I interrupted myself in saying when you were going to be in Champaign, which is on the 5th of December, at the Champaign Public Library, 2:00 p.m. And that program is called The Songs of Woody Guthrie with Bucky Hulker, who's my guest on this portion of Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Our show is made possible today with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. And having mentioned the University of Illinois, I hadn't even realized that the book that you mentioned earlier was in fact published by the University of Illinois Press.
Yes.
Called For Democracy, Workers, and God, Labor Song Poems and Labor Protest.
Yes.
From 1991.
Yes.
Still available, I presume.
Still available, and that was one of many Judith McCullough, who did the Music in American Life series, but also had a hand in their Working Class America series at various points. She recently retired from the press, but she was active in getting that my document or my book published there. But she's done that with a lot of people. She was a great person. The press is—it's a great press, I have to say. University of Illinois Press goes to the top of my list. So.
Well, I'm actually going to be doing an interview on Monday, I think, with a U of I musicology professor who. I think it's with U of I Press. She has a book on Charles Ives that just came out in paperback.
Great. Yeah.
I think it's U of I Press. Anyway, she's going to be on the show on Monday, so that should be a nice conversation. Judy McCullough, I just saw a little bit ago, was she got a nice award from somebody or another.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was the American Folklore Society or the Library of Congress.
It was a big one.
Yeah, very big one.
In fact, I tried to get hold of her, and Judy, if you just happen to be listening to this radio program, you don't seem to have an answering machine at home, so call me up, because I'd love to talk to you on the show. Okay, so what have you got?
Well, I'm going to play a song. I suppose this grows out of being a historian. It's called St. Francis. When I was a kid, I was raised as a Protestant, and I always wanted to be a Catholic, and because most of my friends were Catholic, you know. I'll keep it short, but my best friend, when I asked him what it was that was distinct about being a Catholic, it was communion, because he got to do that when he was six. And I said, well, what happens when you take communion? He said, well, you get this pill and this glass of wine. And I said, well, what does it do? He goes, well, you use the wine to wash down the pill. What does the pill do? Well, it cleans your soul. And he sort of explained it like aspirin. And I thought, well, how perfect, you know. If I've lied to my parents, I can go to church on Sunday, take a pill, and I'll be good again for another week. But I always had an affinity for St. Francis. I thought he was a good figure because he liked children and animals, and it seems to me that a religion that's based around that might be better than the way most people misuse religion. This song is in many ways about the misuse of religion for political, let's say, military purposes, and it's just called St. Francis.
That don't mean you'll fly. There's more to heaven than just looking at the sky. Pointing your finger upward, invoking quoted words. Saint Francis must be crying now. Fallen with their swords out fully drawn, thinking that they were right and every foe was wrong. Their bodies joined the topsoil, the blood was raining down. Saint Francis must be crying now. Saint Francis must be crying now. Leading a million children into Satan's hands, taking the safety off and laying waste to lambs, offing the widow's orphans, then waving your waxen hand. St. Francis must be crying now. St. Francis must be crying now. So others cannot know. Behind the curtain, all those clowns aren't wearing clothes. In Legion with the Sabres, they kill the white winged dove. St. Francis must be crying now. St. Francis must be crying now. St. Francis must be crying now. St. Francis must be crying now.
Song by, also by Woody Guthrie, song by Bucky Hawker, sung by Bucky Hawker, called St. Francis, here on Live and Local, hearing him live in our studio. And it's a real privilege to have you on the show. He's going to be in Sullivan tonight at the First Methodist Church, giving a program called The Folk Songs of Illinois. Dinner's at 6, program around 7:30. And if you want to make your reservations, you can, looking for that phone number again, call them at area 217-728-4085 for the Moultrie County Historical and Genealogical Society meeting. But the dinner and the concert is what sounds particularly fun. And then he'll be at the Champaign Public Library coming up on the 5th of December in a program of Woody Guthrie's songs. What do you think of the current state of folk music? What's happening there, and how does it differ, say, from songs of Woody Guthrie, the time of Woody Guthrie?
I would say it's in a sorry state. I think there's a variety of reasons for that. Some of them are just the nature of the music industry. I think the recording industry, as we knew it, let's say, from the 1930s into, I suppose some point in the early to mid-90s, is no longer in existence. I just had a conversation with somebody who produces big concerts for, like, the Stones and Pink Floyd, and, has worked a lot with the major labels, and he just said, for all practical purposes, the major label recording industry is dead in the United States. And, they kind of missed the boat on the digital downloads and everything else. But what happened, I think, in the process is many smaller sort of genres that they sometimes picked up on their secondary labels or third tier labels are no longer getting signed. There's no label support for people doing acoustic music. So people have gone the do-it-yourself route, which, I'm one of them, and I think that's very good. But it's much harder to get your material out there without support and management and all that. So I think there's been changes there. But within the folk music genre itself, too, I think my feeling was at some point in the 70s, probably about the time the war was winding down, many folk singers became more introspective. I love James Taylor, but he was kind of on the edge of that, kind of talking more about personal kind of psychological issues, and I think there's always a need for that. But that became more predominant in the genre. And along with that, there was kind of a puritanical attitude that still persists that, it's hard to believe there's still people who will get mad when a band has a drummer or plugs in or something like Dylan at Newport in 63 or 64 or whenever it was. So I think there were, changes in the industry and changes within folk music that are responsible for the decline. There are many good musicians still out there plying the trade, so don't get me wrong, probably more than ever. But I think it's a much harder road to hoe these days and to try to make a living at it. And there are people still doing very much Woody Guthrie kind of music out there and writing political music and socially conscious kind of songs. But it's much more difficult, I would say, these days to get an airing. But that's true in general of all independent bands. It doesn't matter, or acts, regardless of what style they're doing.
Well, it almost seems like you said that the major record label industry is virtually dead or all but dead, and you need to get an agent. I wonder if the record companies haven't been replaced by the agents in a way where, you know, the agents and the marketers help you to get your product out there, but it's on your own label.
Yes.
And then you got to be driven to CD Baby or iTunes,
right,
or your own website or whatever.
Yeah. I think the burden has really shifted more and more to the artists to try to come up with their own promo and marketing, or to hire the people to do that. And that's difficult. You know, the clubs are the same way. I mean, you used to be able to make a living playing clubs in Chicago and doing summer festivals, but there's very few clubs that want to pay you, you know, that kind of money anymore. Even if you fill the room, they don't want to pay a local band $1,000 or $1,500. They'd rather just give you the door,
yeah,
and make you pay for the sound man. So I think increasingly the financial burden has shifted to the artists. And this is true all the way to the top. You know, when you see those big shows now, like at Soldier Field, where there's a band that comes in, whether it's U2 or the Stones are really bearing the financial burden of that, not their management companies, if you look at the contracts and the way they're written, you know. So it's just kind of interesting. Not that they don't still make tons of money. They do, because they can afford to float their loans that way or to finance it that way. But I think for the run-of-the-mill musicians, it's a harder life right now than it used to be. I don't know about classical. That's a whole other world.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a sort of a separate thing. But certainly in jazz, it's very similar across the country as well.
Well, I'm amazed just locally, particularly Champaign-Urbana, excuse me, knowing what, you know, a lot of the groups that have come through our show who play at, say, the Iron Post in downtown Urbana, and the number of times where the cover is $5,
yeah,
$7, something like that, and you know that's what the band's getting if they even get all of that.
Yeah,
you know, and to see there's maybe 30 people in there, so how do you get by?
I people just do whatever they can.
I mean you.
Yeah, well, for me, it's a different story. For me, I mean, it does come in handy sometimes to have a PhD, I have to say. It gives me some, you know, modicum.
That doesn't help everybody.
No, that's true. It gives me some modicum of respectability. So, and I also have a new nonprofit. It's not new. It's now 4 years old. But, you know, what I've figured out is that if you're going to be a musician in the market today, you have to have, you know, you have to have some real skills, I think, and figure out a model, and maybe that's too technical a term for it, that works for you to try to generate revenue and let you do what it is you want to do. Well, you know, I just finished, it's not out yet, Volume 4, this Folk Songs of Illinois series, and we got some funding from the Illinois Arts Council before everything went south, and also from the National Endowment for the Arts. So, you know, I can go out and raise grant funds on some of my projects to help me do things like that. I've got some more grants in right now. I'm trying to do a Volume 5 in that series to kind of finish it off. And I get a lot of calls. You know, this year I did some work for the State Department. I've done that through their cultural affairs programming, through the consulates in Europe. I did a 3-day seminar for American studies teachers in Germany, in one of the states in Germany. You know, I do some residency things. I did a SUNY Oswego, you know, the state system of New York. I did a 1-week residency with their history department, you know, playing songs, talking about, looking at different documents to understand American history. So, you know, I'm fortunate that I have other avenues in the music business that allow me to generate, you know, some cash and don't require me to kind of go into the club scene and walk out with $25 or $50 a night like a lot of people
do.
And then try to live on it. Yeah. It's just really bad right now. I mean, I know people in Chicago, great jazz musicians who were like, you know, at the top of the session pool for getting calls when they did commercials or did jazz sessions, really top-notch people. And they're looking for regular jobs, and they're in their 50s because it's really bad right now with no corporate money out there for parties and, they, you know, fewer events at universities when they're doing big events here. You know, it's just less money for that kind of stuff. So,
well, if we're talking about 3, 4, 5 volumes in your Folk Songs of Illinois CD series,
yeah,
distributed by the University of Illinois Press, by the way.
Yes.
We probably better try to sneak something in here.
Sure.
Your choice. What do you pick out of all of those?
Out of those, you mean to play live or?
Yeah, no, right now. Sure.
Well, we can dovetail with both Woody Guthrie and the Folk Songs of Illinois series. So how
about that?
Yeah, that sounds good.
So this would be a song by Woody Guthrie.
This is by Woody Guthrie.
Wrote in Illinois or something?
As far as I can tell, he did write it while he was in Illinois in 1947. Woody spent a fair amount of time in the state and first came through in the late 1930s and then got drafted at the end of the war and did time at Fort Scott down near East St. Louis, Alton area.
Did time.
Yeah, he didn't like it. Well, he'd already done two or three stints in the Merchant Marines, and it was literally like a couple days after the war ended that he got a draft notice. He was married and had a daughter, and, you know, he got shipped out, and he spent a fair amount of time here then, and he didn't have to serve his full 2 years. They let him out early, but there wasn't anything to do. Like, it was right after the war, and they were still taking men into the military, but sometimes they were just literally sitting around all day because— There wasn't anything to do for them. So, but he did become more familiar with Illinois, and then he came back here in the 40s, several times in the 40s, spent time with Studs Terkel. I just found a telegram, in fact, in the archives from Woody to his wife Marjorie back in New York on Mermaid Avenue on Coney Island. And he said, I just got here. It took me 20 hours. Be good. I'm staying at the home of Louis Terkel. And he gives his address. Well, it's Studs. That was in October of 1947. So there's a strong connection that Woody had here to Illinois. This is a song he wrote in 47 about one of many mining disasters here. In Illinois, we've had a history of, we were talking about death and dying, mining disasters, because this is a coal state. The worst coal mine disaster was in 1909 here in Illinois, in Cherry, Illinois. This one left 111 miners dead, and Woody claimed that these lyrics were not his, but they were the notes the miners left behind before they died, which is not uncommon in those accidents if they live a while. It's called, sometimes called Centralia or just the dying miner. Happened an hour ago, way down in that tunnel of coal. The gas caught fire from somebody's lamp, and the miners are choking on smoke. Goodbye to my honey, little Dickie. Goodbye to the ones that I love. Most all of the miners won't be coming home tonight when that work whistle blows. Dear sister and brother, goodbye. Dear mother and father, goodbye. My fingers are weak and I cannot write. Goodbye, Centralia, goodbye. Looks like the end for me. All of my buddies I see were all writing letters on a slate rock wall. Please carry these words to my wife. I found a place with some air, and I crawled and I drug myself there. The smoke's coming in and the fumes getting bad, and the gas is burning my eyes. Dear sister and brother, goodbye. Dear mother and father, goodbye. My fingers are weak and I cannot write. Goodbye, Centralia, goodbye. Forgive me for the things I've done wrong. I love you lots more than you know. When the night's whistle blows and I don't come home, do all that you can to help Mom. I can hear the moans and the groans of more than 100 good men. So work and
accept this mind so this doesn't happen again. Eyes are blind in the fumes, and it sounds like the men are all gone. So work and fight and organize so the fires can't kill daddies no more. Dear sister and brother, goodbye. Dear mother and father, goodbye. My fingers are weak. Goodbye, Centralia, goodbye. Goodbye, Centralia, goodbye. Goodbye, Centralia, goodbye.
A song of Woody Guthrie, which is also a folk song of Illinois, sung by Bucky Hulker. And it's also one of those songs of death and dying.
It is, of sorts. We covered everything with that.
How about that? Yeah. And the show's not even over yet. So still time to go. It's Bucky Hulker here on Live and Local, live in our studio. And you can hear him twice in our area in the next couple of weeks, including tonight in Sullivan, Illinois, and then on the 5th of December at Champaign Public Library, and covering tonight the Folk Songs of Illinois, and then on the 5th in Champaign, Songs of Woody Guthrie. So we're kind of covering it all. I was looking here. It says here, before you discovered Woody Guthrie and folk music, that you kind of got into playing guitar. You didn't mention this when I asked you earlier. It said, girls were a big incentive. You wanted to be like Elvis or John Lennon, but, quote, I like the way Dylan smoked. And I assume that means cigarettes.
Cigarettes. Yeah. Yes.
What do you think about how Dylan is smoking now, by which I mean,
oh my God,
music?
Yeah.
I did not go see him. I've never seen him, but he was here in Urbana just a couple weeks ago, I think. And apparently he's, virtually just doing rock music, it seems like.
Yeah.
Somebody was telling me last night that if you listened really, if you could even understand the words, if you listened really closely, you might be able to recognize that he was really doing one of the old songs. You just couldn't tell.
Yeah. It's very difficult to hear him anymore live. Even on his records, he's reduced himself to kind of mumbling. Every now and then, he'll try to jump on a melody. But even his old material, and, I like the fact that he's trying to reinvent his songs all the time, but sometimes there's no melody left to find out. And if you can't hear the lyrics, how do you even know what song he's really playing anymore?
Especially since that was always the big thing. It was never his voice.
Yeah.
It was the lyrics. So,
I'm not a Dylan fanatic. I have a love-hate relationship with Bob Dylan. I always feel like I'm stuck in a house of mirrors when I listen to Bob Dylan. And I think it's, there's a difference between Dylan and, say, Woody Guthrie, and I probably line up more in the Guthrie camp. Dylan songwriting is, it's an attempt to be more literate, but also it provides him with an opportunity to kind of obscure himself or to obfuscate or, make things less clear because they're so filled with kind of ironic statements. And his life is kind of like that, the way he chooses to confound people continually and confound the media, whereas, I think Woody had a more straightforward approach to his songwriting, borrowed from folk music and wanted to be straightforward with his lyrics. I write that way too. And also, I come out of more what I call the formalist songwriting school, which is the kind of the, Elvis Costello style or the Beatles, or you could go back, I think, to Hoagy Carmichael or Johnny Mercer, which is, you got a verse, you got an intro, a catchy intro, verse, chorus, an instrumental bridge, a vocal bridge, chorus, chorus out, you know, that kind of thing, and maybe a solo after the vocal bridge or something like that. Whereas Dylan borrows from folk tradition, but also kind of more like a Kerouacian tradition where it's wide open and open-ended and you never quite know where it's going to go. So, you know, I've always, as I said, had a love-hate relationship, but I did like the cigarette thing, and I didn't know it at the time, but he stole that. That's a Woody Guthrie pose for holding the cigarette. There's a early Woody Guthrie shot where he's got the cigarette hanging out his mouth like this, and if you look at Dylan's, I think it's his first record cover, maybe the second one, he's got the cigarette and the same Gibson guitar like Woody would play sometimes. It's, you know, it's a dead ringer for Woody doing the same thing. So it's
Where's
cool.
your cigarette?
Well, I gave that up. I mean, I took that up like they did for a while, but unlike Dylan, I figured out at some point if you're going to sing, especially if you're getting into your late 30s, early 40s, you need to quit smoking if you're going to keep your voice, you know.
But your voice has a little smoky quality to it.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful voice. I love hearing
thanks.
You sing, and I love hearing you talk.
Oh, thank you.
You should do radio.
We should talk about that. I had my own radio show when I was 8. Did I
no,
I don't
think, you didn't mention that.
Yeah, well, my dad owned a small AM radio station. I loved old AM radio, you know, back in the old days in small towns. My dad owned the smallest station you could own in the United States. And at Christmas season for a month, he put me on the air with my sister sometimes, sometimes not, as Santa's helpers. And we had a guy, a sales rep, who played Santa Claus. And we would read letters from kids. They would write to Santa Claus. The post offices would deliver them to us, and we would read them over the air. So I got to be on the air very early in my life, which was it was very cool, you know.
Age 8.
Yeah, at age 8.
That's impressive.
My dad was crazy, I swear to God. I mean, what was he doing putting us on at 8 years old? My sister was terrified. She would just shake reading these letters, you know. I liked it, and I had a good person to work with. The sales manager had a nice voice, and so I enjoyed, you know, that whole radio thing. And I think you and I have talked about this. One of the things I find lacking in modern radio, especially on a lot of the public affiliates, is the kind of lack of vocal training among the announcers.
You remembered that conversation.
Yes.
That was after we turned the mic off.
I mean, I get a little perturbed now and then when I turn on like WVEZ in Chicago because the voices, it's like, well, why don't they just go to a class and like develop a little more vocal styling instead
of... Ira Glass, for example.
Yeah, that would be it. You said it. I hope he doesn't hear this.
Well, he's a wonderful radio host, but he's, you know.
I just don't get that.
It's like he started a whole school of deliberate amateur sound.
Yeah,
you know?
It deliberately so, yes. And now it's infected. There's a lot of female announcers who have that same kind of vocal styling. And I'm sure they all went to expensive undergraduate liberal arts colleges, but I don't dig it, man. I just don't dig it.
Well, before we dig a few more songs, we won't have time for a few, but maybe one or two. Let me mention for our audience throughout our listening area some other shows you can go out and dig tonight and tomorrow and maybe Saturday if you want. So today, let's see, the Iron Post in downtown Urbana is hosting at 7 o'clock the University of Illinois Jazz Combos, a couple of them. And anything else there tonight? Not that I see. The University of Illinois Steel Band is at the Krannert Center tonight at 7:30. At Eastern Illinois University in Charleston, their Jazz Lab Band is at the Dowden Fine Arts Center. The Millikan Vocal Jazz Concert is tonight at 7:30 in Decatur in the Albert Taylor Theater. Music Man Jr., which we talked about on yesterday's show, is being put on by Champaign Park District Youth Theater at Centennial High School. That's tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at 7, with a Saturday matinee as well. A Chorus Line, the musical, is at the Assembly Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Champaign. That's tonight at 7:30. At the Catherine Randolph Theater in Danville, it's the show Inherit the Wind, is tomorrow and Saturday at 8 o'clock. There's a family music show at the American Legion in Mattoon tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Kilbourn Alley Blues Band is at Memphis on Main in downtown Champaign tomorrow night at 9:30. And a gospel show by the Tony Brothers at Boiling Springs Church of God in Decatur. That's tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And some fun stuff on the weekend, of course, as well. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. We're visiting with Bucky Halker, who is going to be in Sullivan tonight. There's a dinner at 6 o'clock and then the show at around 7:30. It's the annual meeting of the Moultrie County Historical and Genealogical Society, but it's being taking place at the First United Methodist Church on West Jefferson Street in Sullivan. Dinner's at 6, and I guess I said concert at 7. If you want to make reservations, phone the Heritage Center at 728-4085. And then Bucky's going to be at the Champaign Public Library on December the 5th with a program of songs by Woody Guthrie. That's at 2 o'clock on the 5th. And we're really pleased to have you on the show today. Well, we've got, I guess we probably have time for one more song, about 3 minutes.
Okay.
You got a 3-minute song?
Yeah, I do. Do you want to hear a Woody tune or do you want to hear a folk song of Illinois? You can.
Let's go with a folk song of Illinois.
Okay, let's do that. And yeah, this would be a good one. I'll play this because it's a little bit different. This is a song that we don't know where it came from, anonymous, but definitely was popular here in Illinois because from the 1870s onward, there was a Grange movement very active here in Illinois on trying to reform the railroad system so farmers would get better rates on railroad shipping. And then the Grange kind of morphed into the Populist Party, the Populist Movement. Then in the 30s, this became popular again because there was another agricultural, and general economic depression. So every time that would happen, the song would regain popularity, and it was collected here in Illinois in the 30s. It's been performed by many people. It's and recorded. It's called The Farmer is a Man. When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, we forget that it's a farmer feeds us all. If you're lonely, look and see, then I know that you'll agree that the farmer is a man who feeds us all. Yeah, the farmer is a man. Yes, the farmer is a man. He lives on his credit till the fall. Then they take him by the hand and they lead him from the land, and the bankers are the ones that get it all. When the lawyer makes his rounds and the butcher cuts a pound, they forget that it's the farmer feeds them all. When the preachers and the crooks, they go walking by the brooks, they forget that it's a farmer feeds them all. Yeah, the farmer is a man. Yes, the farmer is a man. He lives on his credit till the fall. With the interest rate so high, it's a wonder he don't die, and the bankers are the men who get it all. When the lawyer says he's broke and the merchant's up in smoke, they forget that it's a farmer feeds them all. It would put them to the test if the farmer took a rest, because the farmer is a man who feeds us all. You know that the farmer is a man. Yes, the farmer is a man. He lives on his credit till the fall. His pants are wearing thin, and his condition, it's a sin. Yeah, the farmer is a man. Yeah, the farmer is a man. Yeah, the farmer is a man who feeds us all.
Bucky Hawker on Live and Local. Thank you very much for joining us
on
the show.
Real pleasure, Kevin. Great to be here.
It's been a treat. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYNL-FM, and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYNL is a member-supported service at the College of Media at Illinois, and we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. This Saturday's wine tasting from noon to 4 features a selection of 13 wines, and details are at thecorkscrew.com.